As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Well, we'll have Bethany Mandel coming up a little bit later this hour. I love Bethany. She writes for the Deseret News. She is a homeschooling mother of five and the author of a book called Stolen Youth, How Radicals Are Erasing Innocence and Indoctrinating Our Children. But she's got some great thoughts on the Supreme Court hearing on the Maryland school case yesterday that would allow parents, or, you know, the reason this is going to the court, it would not allow parents to opt out their kids and taking part of some of the Alphabet Mafia stuff involving controversial books. So Bethany, coming up, plus we'll have an audio cut of the day. Right now, we welcome back to the show the Attorney General of Missouri, Andrew Bailey, back with us. How are you? It's been just a little bit. Hope things are well.
Hey, thanks for having me on, my friend. I appreciate it. All good here in sunny Jefferson City today.
Yeah, it's beautiful here as well, Andrew, so we do like the spring weather. But let me ask you about some of the cases that are in the news. So on Abrego Garcia, the Maryland father, Andrew, on the claims that due process did not exist in this guy's situation, to me, not being a lawyer, not being an attorney general, I see a lot of due process that took place with a guy that crossed into this country illegally. But even some conservative, you know, legal minds have criticized the administration over that particular move. What are your thoughts?
Look, this guy was properly removed from the United States. And there's a lot of facts that the mainstream media is ignoring here that I think are worth highlighting. The guy crossed the border illegally. He committed a criminal act to enter this country. He was under a final order of deportation. The government rescinded his protected legal status due to his gang ties. And let's not forget, in 2021, his wife had an order of protection against him, citing physical domestic abuse. So just because the Biden administration tolerated criminal aliens abusing their wives with gang ties hanging out in this country doesn't mean the Trump administration has to. And they issued that final order of removal and thus removed him. I would also point out that the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 allows the president, under his executive authority, to repel predatory incursions from foreign countries. There doesn't have to be a declared war. There just has to be a predatory invasion or predatory incursion, excuse me. And when you've got El Salvadoran or South American gang members who have coalesced around gang affiliations in this country or committing criminal acts, then the president owes them less due process to remove them. And in this instance, this individual received ample opportunity to remedy and correct his illegal immigration status and failed to do so.
So how do you interpret, because there's a lot of people on the left that are making this claim that I think is inaccurate, that Trump is just thwarting and ignoring the Supreme Court on this issue?
No, it's that the courts are ignoring executive authority in this issue. Look, there are three co-equal branches of government. This is a constitutional crisis of radical progressive activist judges making. They should butt out of the executive authority. They don't have any ability or constitutional authority or right to dictate foreign policy or immigration or national security issues any more than they have the right to set bombing targets in a time of war or set troop movements on the battlefield. That is the executive branch's authority, not the judicial branch's. They are there under Article 3 to adjudicate individual cases and controversies. And look, at the end of the day, what the court is saying here is, hey, President Trump, go to this foreign country and bring this guy back. How can they order the president to do that? He's gone. He's in a foreign country, in a foreign country's prison. So, I don't even know what remedy they could craft to fix the problem that they've created.
Well, and I think that the president of El Salvador pretty much said the same thing. He said, what do you want me to do, sneak in a terrorist to the United States?
Yeah, the court is inviting further violations of the immigration code and imposing on the executive branch's ability to conduct foreign policy and diplomacy.
So then what do you make of this? Another situation with the court over the weekend, and I don't know that this has gotten as much attention, but there was something that came down on early Saturday morning, right before 1 a.m. It was an unsigned order from the court that was a response to an emergency request to prevent the removal of Venezuelan migrants. And they said the government is directed not to remove any member of the putative class of detainees from the United States until further order of this court. So what are we to make of that?
Well, again, this is why the courts should stay out of issues of national security and foreign policy, because that kind of emergency order that's unclear and that there's not like an open dialogue amongst policymakers to set a policy position that makes sense and is functional. It's just an unelected federal judge making a decision, and then the rest of the world is supposed to figure out how to implement that decision, and that can be unwieldy and difficult and complicated. And then the judges get more frustrated because they think that the parties aren't obeying their orders when their orders should have never issued like that in the first place. And I think that points to the complication when you have judges issuing those kind of equitable orders. Again, that's not adjudicating cases and controversies. That's demanding foreign policy being conducted in a certain manner. That's the exclusive province of the executive branch of government.
It's interesting the way, and you know this, the way that these things get manipulated. So the left wants to claim right now that, because it's a common sense thing for the president and anyone else to say, we really can't give court hearings to millions of people who have crossed over into our country illegally because we'd be here till the end of time, right? We're celebrating 250 years of our country. We'd be here for another 250 years if they tried to do that. So there's an effort to remove the people that were here illegally, and especially those who are criminals, but the Democrats want them as their poster child.
Well, I think there's also, I'm getting whiplash from the left's hypocrisy on the issue of judicial activism. Wasn't it just a couple of years ago, they bemoaned the federal judiciary, specifically the United States Supreme Court, for overturning Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs decision that merely said, look, there's no United States federal constitutionally protected right to murder children. And yet that was the worst thing that had ever happened. And this activist court upending the law. And yet here they're celebrating the court's invasion of the province of the executive branch. I mean, they can't have it both ways.
Did you have any time, kind of switching gears here, Andrew Bailey, our attorney general in Missouri, is here. Did you have time to listen or pay attention to some of the arguments from that Maryland schools case yesterday? I mentioned I'm going to cover it with Bethany here at the bottom of the hour, but that was rather fascinating, the exchanges in that.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It is a fascinating issue. And here you see kind of the conflicting impulses that are protected by different rights in the United States Constitution. I can't wait to hear your next hour and the interview on this topic by someone who can further illuminate it. But I'll say this. I mean, at the end of the day, I think parental rights wins on this issue. And again, we're talking about an opt-out process. We're not talking about, removal of material or stomping out someone's First Amendment rights. We're just protecting kids from an individual's expression of rights that don't comport with the parents' values. And certainly the parents have a right to do that. You don't have a right to... Yeah, I got a right to speak. I don't have a right to force people to listen to.
Yeah, the problem is, and I understand the legal argument there, but I also understand even Elena Kagan kind of, drifted in this direction. This material, when you start looking at this material, and I'm pretty open-minded. I mentioned my best friend on the planet is gay. My daughter, who's 10, is aware of that. But this content is not appropriate for 3-, 4-, 5-year-olds, 7-year-olds. Beyond the topic itself, kids don't understand what you're saying in this moment. These pride parade people who want to take their kids to it, their kids don't really know what's going on. They don't understand it when they see a drag queen or a drag king. And now you got books for 4- and 5-year-olds where you're supposed to highlight those issues. It's just, I know the religious exemption part is the key and the cornerstone of the, of the legal case, but it's not appropriate content for anyone. But that school district apparently thinks it is.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, look, why would you want to steal some young child's innocence by exposing them, sexualizing them, exposing them to human sexuality that they're not prepared to understand or talk about? You're stealing their youth from them, their childhood. Let them enjoy being kids. There's plenty of time
Absolutely.
Adolescents and post-adolescents to have those adult conversations.
Absolutely. Especially when we're in a situation where we've had learning loss and all these other things in the aftermath of the pandemic. All right, let me ask you about a couple of things happening here in Missouri, including, did I see that there was a lawsuit that was dropped related to the state control takeover of the St. Louis Police Department?
Hey, look, that lawsuit, there is still a lawsuit pending from the city of St. Louis challenging the statute that provides for a state board of police commissioners. And again, it's not a state takeover because at the end of the day, the people that serve on the board have to come from the city of St. Louis,
right, or
the communities represented. But that lawsuit's ongoing. I think the court has, you know, threatened to dismiss it absent some showing that there's merit behind it. And so we're still watching that process play out and are prepared to intervene on behalf of defending the state statute, and we'll be prepared to do so.
Are you in any way, shape, or form at this point monitoring some of the actions from Gabe Gore's office? And the reason I ask that, we have a, you might be familiar with Elliot Davis, who was at Fox for a long time, and the You Paid For It segment. He's doing some independent investigative journalism. I had him on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he went on Facebook. That's where he does a lot of his content right now. He was quite critical of Gabe Gore in the office because he felt in his reporting like some of the things that were happening there were not too far off from what Kim was doing in that office. So do you have any kind of, you know, monitoring of that at this point, or does that come as a surprise to you?
Yeah, you know, we stay vigilant in ensuring that the laws of the state of Missouri are going to be upheld. And I think the interesting case that touches on this, that just happened recently, was kind of over Christmas time, so I kind of missed, rising to the top of the news cycle. But when Sam Page tried to appoint the county prosecutor to replace Wesley Bell, who was elected to Congress, and Governor Parsons said, no, I have the statutory authority to do that. And certainly we defended Governor Parsons' state authority. And what the Court of Appeal said in that case was that, look, when you've got county prosecutors prosecuting the state criminal code, they are acting on behalf of the state of Missouri. But the counties are still, and cities are still, political subdivisions of the state. Remember the legal nature of the relationship between the states and the federal government as codified in our U.S. Constitution is different because the states preexisted the federal government. That's not true at the state level. Counties and cities are political subdivisions of the state and act only when the state allows them to. And that's certainly true with prosecutors enforcing the state criminal code. So it's something we're stay vigilant on. And again, there's so much has developed since I've been in office based on the removal of Kim Gardner and the lawsuit that we pushed there, the writ of quo warranto. And look, we're going to hold local officials who break the law or refuse to enforce the law accountable. I have not received any reports in my office.
Well, that's good.
That Gabe Gore is not doing that, but certainly it's an issue across the state that we remain vigilant
right
on.
And I was a little surprised by Elliot's reporting, and I've heard, you know, very positive things from that office. That's why I was kind of curious about what you knew about that. Anything that you're focusing on right now you want to get the word out on?
Yeah, look, we just promulgated a rule under our Consumer Protection Authority. It's the first of its kind in the nation, but we follow in the footprints of 19 other states that have passed similar statutes to require age verification on pornography websites. Again, this is a parental rights issue, similar to the opt-in issue with those smut books in the school libraries in Maryland. Same thing here. Look, if I go on a firearms website because I'm shopping for guns or ammunition, because of state laws in New York and California, I have to click whether or not I'm 18 years of age. Well, it should be the same thing with pornographic websites. Kids shouldn't be able to access this. We know kids are increasing their screen time and online presence, and we know that certain websites seek to attract children so they can harvest their individual data and then sell that data to advertisers. We want to protect against kids' exposure to pornography. We require age verification, not only on a device, but on the website itself. That's the first of its kind in the nation. We also require the websites to delete any data that's harvested from the end user to protect Missouri consumers and protect parents' rights to shepherd their children towards adulthood without exposure to this sort of material.
Well, I would say that that's pretty important. So are you telling me that, and I should probably know this, especially as the father of a 10-year-old, you're telling me that there's no age verification on some of these companies, or some do it and some don't, and is there a way to actually track the age verification? That's the part I'm a little confused on.
Yeah, look, different states have required age verification, but if the website is set up to where a user is only required to age verify within the confines of that jurisdiction, then like Missouri kids aren't protected. And so it's important for us to take action here in Missouri to ensure that the Missouri kids are protected as well. And so that will go into effect 90 days from now, and it will absolutely require both website and device age verification to protect kids and parental rights.
Awesome. Andrew Bailey, great to get you on here for the first time in a little while. Hope all is well with the family. It sounds like things are rocking and rolling in the office, and I really appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Hey, thank you, my friend. Likewise. Talk soon.
All right, take care. That's Andrew Bailey, the Attorney General of Missouri. Busy, busy, busy office. Let me kind of piggyback a little bit here on the Abrego Garcia situation, which, you know, if we're being honest here, it's kind of died down the last couple of days,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it has.
We'll see. Well, maybe it's because the Democrats finally got the polling, and they looked at the polling and said, oh, you know what? The majority, overwhelming majority of the people in the country don't think that we should be kind of, you know, going to bat here and falling on this hill, dying on this hill for a guy who's a gang member. But Stephen Miller is outstanding out there with the media, and he's not someone that you want to tangle with if you're in the legacy media because he usually kind of owns you. But he keeps addressing this issue of due process because that's what they say. You know, even Chris Van Hollen comes back from this trip. Members of Congress that went down there that don't really care about their own constituents, they say, Sue, it doesn't matter. This guy, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter the facts. Nothing matters. The only thing that matters, we're not vouching for him. We're not standing up for him. We're just standing up for the Constitution, right? It's all about due process.
You have, in this case, illegal aliens from Venezuela sent here by Maduro who are members of a foreign terrorist organization, Tren de Aragua, an organization that the intelligence community has found is operating at the direction of a hostile, adversarial foreign regime carrying out criminal enterprises to destabilize the political system in the United States.
So he's addressing what I referred to with Andrew Bailey, because there was this court order over the weekend. And of course, the legacy media is all over this because they think the court's coming in here to do something to stop Trump finally. But Miller's explaining, look, this is pretty serious what we're trying to do here in deporting these Venezuelan gang members.
Those are the facts when it comes to TDA. So they're all illegal. They're all gang members. They're all foreign terrorists. And now
facts.
We are being told that they cannot be expelled from our country without an extraordinary amount of individualized adjudication at the district court, circuit court, Supreme Court, up and down, up and down, up and down.
Yeah, so what they want is they want adjudication. They want more adjudication. They are never, ever, ever going to be satisfied because that's not what this is about. I think Laura Ingraham made a great point with this congresswoman named Ansari on this.
If he comes back, let's say he is undeported, and the Democrats are happy about that. If he's undeported, he will be deported from the United States.
Yep.
That will make you miserable, correct? That'll set off a whole new firestorm.
Laura,
what you care about is an illegal immigrant's rights to be here ad infinitum.
She is absolutely right about this. So think about it, because what will happen if he comes back, and I don't know if he's going to come back. He comes back, they present the evidence to the judge. The judge is like, yeah, there's a deportation order. He looks like he's a gang member. Another judge said that. We're going to kick him out. What's the reaction? We got this due process, right, Sue?
Oh,
what is the reaction of Congresswoman Ansari and Chris Van Hollen and others? They'll be set. They're not going to be celebrating the due process. Are they going to go out there and do a news conference in front of the Supreme Court and say, see, we got what we wanted to in this case? No, they're going to be real sad that the gang member left the country. It's baffling.
It is baffling.
This is a union
you
member,
don't want them deported.
A person
That's
with
the real
a U.S.
story.
Citizen,
right, go.
Wife. Yeah. This is a person who the Supreme Court has said needs to be facilitated back to the
we
United
got
States.
It.
That's a fact.
We got it.
Yeah, but that's not what they want. Come on. They're so transparent, aren't they? Gosh. Here we go. Bethany Mandel is coming up next. She is going to talk about this case that went before the Supreme Court yesterday, and she's really good on this topic.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Hey, don't forget, we have a Reardon Roundtable coming up on Friday. It will be my last roundtable for a couple of weeks because I'm heading off with listeners to the Greek Islands this Sunday. But this Friday, Jane will be on the... I kind of just throw that in to kind of rub it in that I'm going to be off on the Greek Islands. But Jane will be here, Steve Butts, and Sean Flower, the mayor of Eureka. I have an audio cut of the day coming up here before the end of the hour. We've been spending a fair amount of time the last 2 days on the case of Mahmoud versus Taylor, the Montgomery County Public School District in Maryland that went up before the Supreme Court yesterday. Bethany Mandel is with us. She wrote a book pretty much about this very topic called Stolen Youth, How Radicals Are Erasing Innocence and Indoctrinating a Generation. She's always one of my favorite guests. I'm kind of sucking up to you, Bethany. She contributes to the Deseret News. How are you? Welcome back. It's been a little while. How are you doing?
I know. It's been too long. So it's actually interesting. I toot my own horn a little bit, but I just think it's really exciting. I was the first national journalist to cover this story over 2 years ago for the Free Press, actually. So this was a follow-up piece to me sort of breaking the story to a national audience when all of these protests first started 2 years ago.
Well, and you know what? I'm probably pretty sure that you and I talked about this a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. you know, the significance of this case. So this is one of those things, and I want you to address maybe some of the background here because I want the audience to know where we are. But honestly, every time I talk about this, I think I get a little bit more angry. I know the focus of the legal case before the court is on a religious exemption, but I even think I heard Elena Kagan say yesterday, hey, maybe more than just a religious exemption. What are you doing here with young kids, three, four, five years old with this material?
Yes. Yeah, no, you don't have to be religious to think that kids don't need to be doing a word search about leather and bondage and sex workers at 3, 4 years old. You just have to have sort of common sense. I was joking with, golly, who was it? Oh, no, you know what? I was watching Greg Gutfeld, and he said, you know, it takes something else to have Muslims, Christians, Catholics, Mormons, and Orthodox Jews all joining together to fight you. And I congratulate Montgomery County Public Schools because they've achieved the impossible. They've done that.
You know, I highlighted a piece that was in the New York Times earlier on the show, and I had missed this originally, but it was a woman, and she's no conservative. She's a flaming liberal and progressive. But she wrote, in criticism of this, basically saying it didn't have to happen. So I want you to give a little background here. Go back to 2 years ago, because this school district became very, very stubborn. They could have done an opt-out. They decided to fight this in court, and now it looks like they're going to get their asses handed to them.
Yeah. So they decided mid-year to take away the ability of these parents to opt out. And they claimed during the oral arguments yesterday that they had too many parents pulling their kids out. And so the normal reaction would be, wow, then we should maybe change gears.
Yeah.
But Montgomery County Public Schools' reaction was, we should remove their ability to pull their kids out. And they spent 2 years of board meetings completely fixated on this issue. Meanwhile, Maryland has absolutely tanked in every single educational ranking, math scores, English scores, you name it. Only 55% of MCTS students are reading on grade level. And you have to keep in mind that for the kids that were learning how to read during COVID, it's much lower. So 55%, though, when the next couple, you know, grades, they graduate, that number is going to go down even further. The close to $2 million that they've spent on this case, perhaps it could have been better used trying to figure out how to fix what they broke during COVID, because Maryland, the state of Maryland, we had the schools closed longest. And MCTS was closed even longer than the average Maryland public school.
What wasn't the message from Ketanji Brown Jackson yesterday? Basically, if you don't like this, take your kids to private school. I mean, that's essentially what she said. I mean, I'm even paraphrasing, am I?
I think it's a great advertisement for school choice, because I agree people should be able to move their children to private schools, but not at the expense of, you know, them not being able to use the public schools. But remember when people used to say, check your privilege? Why doesn't she check her privilege? Because the vast majority of the parents in this case are poor Muslim immigrants who are first generation, who many of whom don't speak English as a first language.
Right. Yeah, that's what's incredible. So what was your take on the arguments yesterday? Because, you know, I played some of the audio. It didn't seem like it went very well at all for the school district. Even the attorney kind of backed into a corner by Gorsuch and some of the others yesterday. And then I kind of mentioned Elena Kagan, who was a little bit more in the middle than maybe we've seen her before.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it went extraordinarily badly for MCPS. And not for a lack of them having over a dozen lawyers helping them on the briefs. The facts of the case are really, really bad for MCPS. And there was nothing that the lawyer could do to change the fact that this was just glaring. And Justice Kavanaugh said, why did you choose this hill to die on? And it's because, and why I covered it so closely, Montgomery County, Maryland is in the outskirts of Washington, D.C., and it's used as a test case by teachers' unions, by education activists, to see how far they can go. And I ran for school board here, and that was part of my fundraising pitch for people outside of Montgomery County, because I said, you will be made to care. By what they're doing here, you will be made to care what they can pull off. And so I'm as certain as I can be that the Supreme Court is going to deliver a pretty decisive victory on behalf of the parents. But I hope it sends a message to school boards around the country that, like, you can't unilaterally decide that you know better than parents.
You know, I made this analogy a little earlier, but let me test the waters here on this. So I have a 10-year-old daughter who's in the grade school district here, Rockwood. And, you know, there's really not been anything along these lines. There's been a little bit, you know, you kind of pay attention to the curriculum, but they haven't gotten too crazy. However, we have a couple of, you know, suburbs here where things could get a little crazy. I always mention Webster Groves and Kirkwood. So is this particular area in Maryland, are they super touchy-feely and liberal, or is that not necessarily the case?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes sense,
oh, my God.
Right?
It's insane.
Right.
It's insane. During COVID, we had people who had lawn signs. Thank you, Anthony Fauci.
Yeah. Okay. It's Webster Groves, Missouri. I just wanted to paint the picture for the audience so they knew what we were up against here. Well, it is fascinating. And I think that the court, I don't know that there's even a doubt right now how they're going to rule when this comes out in, you know, late May or June. But it's fascinating and does cross over into this area that you've written about extensively in the book.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's part of this entire assault on parental rights. And what's really disturbing and disappointing about this is, first of all, they called all of these Muslim immigrant parents white supremacists and bigots.
That came
from the school board. That came from county council members. And it was mentioned yesterday during the oral arguments. But they really victimized people who did not understand the system. At one point, they closed the school board meetings and they locked people out. I filed a lawsuit against MCPS that's still pending because they violated my rights as a journalist by violating the Open Meetings Act. They blocked me on Twitter. Same thing. There was an MCPS Pride account that blocked me. This county is just lighting taxpayer money on fire to, like, make a stand on their religion. And this is their religion, and they're violating actual sincere religious beliefs in order to try to indoctrinate an entire generation.
Bethany, do you know Megan Stack, who wrote that piece that I mentioned for the New York Times? Are you familiar with her at all?
I don't.
Okay. Did you read that piece?
I didn't. No. Okay,
I didn't find it until today, but I'll mention it because at the end, here's what she says. And again, she gets a little progressive in there. She's not offended by any of this, but she understands, at least from what she wrote, why some people would be. And she is disappointed because she said this didn't have to go to the Supreme Court. She said, here in Montgomery County, everyone went to war. Nobody has moved on. Either the school district or the religious parents will prevail at the Supreme Court. And one group of families, either the pious or the LGBTQ, will feel the judgment as a disenfranchisement and a sign that people like them are not wanted at school. And that's a shame because, agree with them or not, they all stood up for their values. We can kind of argue about that last part. But her point, I think, is this has been ugly in your community, right? And it's likely to not get better after this ruling.
Yeah, no, it's really ugly and it's really hateful. We had an elected county council member. His name is Evan Glass, who, by the way, doesn't have children. Out there supporting, you know, the progressive activists who were out there yesterday. They've really created a lot of animosity and a lot of hatred that didn't need to exist. People could have just been allowed to opt their own children out, because it's all they were asking, not to change the curriculum, just to opt their own child out of this curriculum.
And they were doing that, but then they said, again, going back to the messaging, and I can't remember which justice said this yesterday, they realized that so many parents were opting out, they didn't want to do it anymore. But that should kind of be a reflection of why parents are saying we're opting out. That many people are opting out of anything. I don't care if it's calculus. Maybe you sit back and say, wait a second, maybe we should do this a little differently, right?
Yep. What's going on?
Unbelievable. Well, Bethany, thanks for writing about this. Thanks for kind of breaking that story a couple years ago. It was great to catch up with you. I think that we feel pretty good about where the justices are going to go. But again, it's one of those things to me, and this is happening a lot. It's happening with Abrego Garcia. I literally torture myself thinking, how in the world can someone who is fair look at this, no matter who you are in the alphabet mafia, and say that's appropriate for kids?
Yep. Yep. That's right.
Craziness. Bethany Mandel, thank you.
Thanks.
All right,
bye-bye.
We'll see you later. It's just nuts. I keep thinking how, and I've mentioned this before, I have gay friends who are just as opposed to this, and they think it's ridiculous as well. But why someone in Montgomery County, Maryland, thought that they're going to take this all the way to the Supreme Court? Now, mind you, and we didn't address this with Bethany, they've won at the lower court.
Yeah.
So the parents have lost all along. They take it to the high court, and it doesn't look like they're going to lose this time. We'll come back. We got audio cut of the day coming up here before we wrap the show on a Wednesday evening. You know, I spent an afternoon with Patti Smythe and this band at a venture At a venture store. Remember there was a venture off of Olive. It was like Olive and 270 in that area. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
They did. Well, look, I told you I did record company business in the 80s, and I mentioned MS Distributing and Kevin Spivey, who I was. I mean, it might have been that, I think. But I was there for an in-store that they were doing and helping set up the record displays, et cetera. This was back like probably 1982, and that song came out, believe it or not. So, you know, we were talking, I don't even know how we talked about this today, Sue. We were talking about, there was some reference to soda, right? And Diet Coke and, oh, we were talking about New Coke.
Yeah, that's right. It. Right? That's okay. It.
Yeah, New Coke. So I really am not a big fan of Facebook Messenger, but I seem to use it more and more these days, and the listeners tend to engage every once in a while. And what's awesome about Messenger compared to when I was on KMOX is people say nice things for the most part. When I was on KMOX, it was pretty much people just attacking.
Oh,
all the
really?
Time. Yeah, they like to.
It's old.
It's the lefties that like to cause trouble. You see it on full display on a regular basis. So I often, you know, express my love and passion for Diet Coke. I even do it on the top of my X page, if you will. So one of the listeners, Rich, who chimes in, I don't have anything against Rich, he chimes in every once in a while. And this is the funniest thing that people ever say. And I know that you'll probably agree with him a little bit. So diet soda equals poison in a can.
Yep.
Just saying. It's literally the funniest thing that people ever say to me. Let me ask this question. Why is it poison in a can? Why is it poison? Because let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. I drink 8 cans of freaking poison every day. And I'm 60 years old now. I don't have a brain tumor. I'm healthier than, I'd say, 99% of the flipping country, right? I eat pretty well. I'm not fat. I'm not obese. I would put my diet poison against any of the fat crap that people put into their bodies on a regular basis.
I wouldn't take it that way. I would just take it as they're trying to watch out for you.
But what's actually all chemicals?
No,
so what's it doing to me? That's what I want to. I love it when people say that. But what exactly is it doing to me that's so bad?
I don't know.
It's not done anything.
That you're drinking chemicals.
Right,
I have no idea.
Okay, but it's, you know, I'm drinking basically
Wasn't it something about aspartame? Wasn't that it for a while?
Yeah,
I have no idea, though.
I mean, they've done these studies. Here's the other thing about these studies.
It's good you're not defensive.
I am defensive because I just think it's ridiculous. Like, what in the world? There's no evidence. Well, stop. Rich, stop, okay? Here's something else I'm kind of, you know, worked up about. You know, I have this road situation out in Valley Park.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't want to go into all the details here, but they're not doing any work on it right now on Hillsborough Road. But I went to the Valley Park website, you know, just because I wanted to find, I'm not getting answers. I emailed this Nathan guy, who's the city administrator, and he's not responding. So I thought, and I technically live in unincorporated, so I'm in St. Louis County, right? I'm not in Valley Park. But I had some questions about it, and I'm looking on their website for maybe a city councilman, right? So there's 6,000 people. The population of Valley Park, Missouri, which is located right around 141 and 44, which is not too far from where I live, is 6,000, right? How many members of the Board of Aldermen for 6,000 people in Valley Park, Missouri, do you need?
That's a good question. One?
Well, they have six.
And six?
I don't want to pick on only Valley Park because I think you'd find this around the area. But good Lord, you can't tell me that there's not a more efficient form. Look, there's a lot of duplication, right? You got St. Louis County doing some of this. Why in the world do you need so many busybodies on the city council for a town that has 6,000 people? I'd love to know the answer to that. Because that's one person for every 1,000, right?
Yeah.
I think you can. L.A. County only has like 8. And they got 8 million people out there. So they got one for each million person. It just seems ridiculous when you think about it. But that's, again, I'm not just picking up Valley Park. I think this is something that is not uncommon around here with all these municipalities. I've lived
it
here
is.
More
it
than
is.
Any other place in my life. And there's probably not a month that goes by, Sue, where I don't discover a new municipality in St. Louis that I've never heard of in my life.
It's crazy.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, I got a little bit of a trifecta here. First, some stunning news from Illinois. So sad, too. Dick Durbin making an announcement.
I truly love the job of being United States Senator. But in my heart, I know it's time to pass the torch. So I'm announcing today that I will not be seeking re-election at the end of my term. We're also fortunate to have a strong Democratic bench ready to serve. We need them now more than ever.
Really? Wow. I don't know what's going to happen there. I was asking Annie because she's more dialed into Illinois. It's going to probably be a very crowded race, some members of Congress that will get into that. But farewell to Dick Durbin. He was a member of Congress for a long time on the House side and obviously been stirring things up in the Senate for a long time. Now, Carolyn did a... this is funny. I was driving in. I get into the car and I hear a soundbite. Honestly, I send this text to Fred Sue. I thought it was Riley Gaines. It's not Riley. It's Carolyn.
What?
I think their voices are similar. But this was a money bite from Carolyn today.
The Democrat Party is full-blown crazy. Their motto should be illegal immigrant criminals first and American citizens last, because that's exactly what they are doing. You have seen Democrat elected officials who swear an oath to stand up for their constituents and law-abiding American citizens spending more time advocating for illegal alien criminals, gangbangers, and wife beaters in the case of Abrego Garcia from Maryland. It's despicable. It is disgusting. And we are going to continue to call them out. And this administration is going to continue to fully enforce our nation's immigration laws.
Boom. Mic drop. Carolyn killed it there. And she's right. But then you got Jasmine Crockett. You know Jasmine. She went to school here, fancy private university, MICDS, right? And she's down in Houston representing people down there with a fake voice. But now she's a star because, unfortunately, I'm going to blame conservatives. We've made her a star because she says stupid stuff and we give her attention. And now she's on Jimmy Kimmel.
When you bring up the idiot known as Elon Musk.
You're disqualified right there. Right
exactly.
There. You want to call that guy who is the richest man on the planet an idiot, right? Well, what else do
Who's
you call
trying
him?
To help you.
Yeah, you call him a Nazi, too. That's the only thing they want to say.
He is not only, like, very sinister and has no idea what he's doing, and people are like, oh, no, he absolutely knows, because he's the richest man in the world. Like, yes, he knows how to hire smart people, but don't conflate that and believe that he is the genius, because he ain't.
What? He ain't.
Yeah.
That's
you
a good
are.
Way to close it.
I actually wanted to be an anesthesiologist. So I've always been really good at math and science.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't want to talk to people.
You wanted to put people to sleep, and you kind of are doing the opposite thing now.
Yes, I want them to be woke now.
Yeah, see, they're proud of the woke label. I will say this. You know, she also wanted to challenge Elon Musk to a IQ test. Jimmy said, would you do that? I would not make the case that Jasmine Crockett is stupid. She went to a fancy private school here in St. Louis. She seems to be rather educated. I would certainly criticize her politics. But to make a... I mean, it just falls flat from the very beginning to make an argument. You want to criticize Elon Musk? You want to get specific about what he's doing?
Fine.
Or you just want to insult him and say that he's not smart when he's had one of the more successful American companies in history.
It's ridiculous.
Right? But that's what they do. And again, we kind of turn them into stars, unfortunately. I hate the fact that Jasmine Crockett is getting so much attention. She desires that attention. She's trying to get on Jimmy Kimmel's show. And unfortunately, we kind of made it happen. But there you go. Have a great night, Sue.
You
do. We will talk tomorrow at 3 o'clock. I'm off to a concert for my daughter tonight. It's
Ooh,
a strings concert at Stanton
that.
Elementary. She's playing violin. I can't wait to see it.
Get more at 971talk.com.